Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the You Should Run podcast, recording, as everyone is, from quarantine. I'm your host, Tony Heil, elected official, council member in Bridgeport, Pennsylvania, which is near Philadelphia. And we have our struggles with the COVID-19 right now, and like everyone else, and my thoughts and wishes are with everybody dealing with this, whether it's in the disease itself or the economy or just, you know, concern for others. Speaking of others, over the past year and a half or more, I have been talking with other people who've run for office from across the country. I've been very privileged to talk with people who have run for office from borough council like myself, to state legislature, to statewide like state auditor Rob Sand in Iowa, and Eugene DePasquale in Pennsylvania, to members of Congress, like Congresswoman Madeline Dean, and Jamie Raskin, Brendan Boyle, and even Senator Bob Casey. So look back at those episodes. My hope is to talk to someone from every state to get a clear sense of what it's like running for office all across the country. And today, I'm really excited to have my first guest from the terrific state of Louisiana. His name is Ethan Ashley, ran for school board in Louisiana, and has a really good perspective on what it's like being a young person running for office, getting his experience out there, and, you know, how he is learning from others and sharing his knowledge to make his community better, to make the schools better, and to fight for other young people and families in his region. Before I get into this, I encourage you to like and subscribe to the podcast. Like on Facebook, where you can watch some live streaming occasionally. And share on Twitter at YouShouldRunPod. And email me at TonyHeil@gmail.com with any guest suggestions, especially from one of the very few states we don't have a guest from yet, like Hawaii. Got Alaska in there, but no Hawaii yet. So, with all that in mind, Ethan, thank you so much for taking time to speak on the podcast today.
Well, I really appreciate the invite and look forward to being able to just discuss some of the issues that we know make it maybe difficult for people to run. But I think the work that you're doing to uplift this issue, and then, you know, making sure that you're connecting with a person from each state. Brother, you are a godsend in real respects, because I know when I was running, if I could have had a podcast or something like this that I could have tuned into, I certainly would have. So thank you for your leadership in this moment, and truly appreciate you. And I just also want to state very clearly that in this time that we're dealing with in terms of COVID-19, that my thoughts and prayers are definitely with your listeners as well, and definitely with you too, my friend.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. And, you know, I think it's important, especially in talking to someone like you, and I mean that in terms of someone from Louisiana. 2020, everyone's talking about the presidential race. They're talking about Joe Biden, Donald Trump. And when they talk about that, there are maybe a dozen states in play. In Pennsylvania, unless things change, and things might, because the world's crazy. But people talk about Pennsylvania being a swing state, Wisconsin, Florida, of course, all the time, Arizona. But there's still people running for office across the country. And it's important that people get encouraged to run for office and not leave any state or any region behind, really, no matter your party or background, because otherwise voices are left behind.
I mean, that's exactly right. I mean, I will tell you, there's a bunch of down ballot votes and elections that are taking place this in Louisiana this fall that, you know, we want to make sure people are paying attention to. Particularly, school board is coming up again. My seat is actually coming up again in the fall. The DA's race in Louisiana. There's a bunch of DA races that will take place across our great state, and judgeships, which is definitely a really important part of our three-pronged government. So, you know, I agree with you. I think a lot of folks are in this moment probably getting lost in the fair fan of what's happening at the federal level because of the leadership that exists in this moment responding to COVID-19, or rather the lack thereof in some people's eyes. And so, you know, as we try to figure out, you know, how we can lead best from our state, it's definitely important for folks to get involved with those down ballot election.
And, you know, we're going to talk about your race and your work for on the school board there. But before I do, you just mentioned these other down ballot races like judges and DA races. And that's whether it's DA or attorney general in different counties or parishes in Louisiana or statewide in places. We see, finally, I think, a concerted effort by progressives, minority groups as well, who really people who care about justice, investing in those races, because the difference between one district attorney or attorney general and another when it comes to how you look at criminal justice reform, how you look at racial justice, gender, everything, it is such a powerful election, and people don't pay attention to that.
I agree with you, and I'll tell you that I think life outcomes are certainly tied to our local leaders. I think you articulated that very well. I know we're going to get into school board, but in this moment, the two major functions of our nation at this time, particularly those who have been deemed as essential workers, are largely the folks who are our healthcare providers, and then our cafeteria workers, who in many places and spaces are feeding communities, particularly communities of young people. And so it's just interesting when you look at who is leading those districts and what is their priority to ensure that the life outcomes of those who are living in those spaces are put at center. And like you said, our progressives are definitely getting involved across the state. Louisiana is no different. I mean, you look at our governor's race, we have a Democratic governor. Now we have a majority Republican state legislature, but, to have a Democratic governor in a largely known red state is getting to the heart of progressives starting to step up, invest, and show the need in this time for safety nets and having folks who are thinking about, not just the cents and dollars, but rather people at the center of the work.
So speaking about thinking about, the podcast is called You Should Run, and at some point you thought about running for office. When did you think about politics in that adult way for the first time? Like, do you remember when you first thought, I need to get involved, whether it's running or just paying attention to the political scene and being active?
Certainly. Tony, this story is a little, might be a little off, but I'm going to share it because we're with family, right? So why not share it? So oftentimes I tell people, preface this with, I grew up in a predominantly poor neighborhood. And my mother was a Head Start teacher, and she was raising me in the 80s. And if you don't know anything about Head Start salaries, they are not killing the game when it comes to, their finances. And so, mother was married at one point in time, found herself divorced, raising three boys. And so I've heard it all, when we go to stores, we don't have it, don't look at it, don't ask for nothing. And we lived on government support, in real respects. And so, when I was a little kid, I hate that this is the truth, but I was about 6 years old and I found myself handcuffed at the local police precinct, and my mother had caught me stealing, Now, I'll tell you, I admit in this moment to you and the listeners that I had stolen Bubblicious, it's a terrible thing to admit in this moment, but
it's better than Bazooka Joe, Ethan.
That's true. But it was something about that packaging that just got me. We all know that the gum itself doesn't last more than like 15 to 30 seconds. No offense to those who make Bubblicious. It got me, and my mother, at the time was just really, talking to me about the issues that were surrounding my circumstance, and I think it was the first time that I learned and really had a true understanding that you know, I don't understand why the law is the way it is currently for those who are struggling and didn't ask to struggle, right? I think most people know that to be born is a lottery. You don't have young people who are in heaven or, you know, in the place where before we're born, you know, trying to negotiate and say, you know, hey, I really want the poor family. Please give me, I want to be able to have grit when I grow up. That doesn't exist. That doesn't happen. Young people are born and they didn't ask to be here. And as a result, you know, they either are thriving in their circumstance based off of the lottery in which they received or not. And oftentimes that not, you know, had me thinking, well, why, if we know that this exists, why aren't there laws to make sure that young people, no matter what circumstance they're birthed into, that they can be taken care of? And I think that was the first time I realized that the law is the problem. Like, I'm hungry, I want Bubblicious, or I want this. Like, I don't understand why I can't have this, and why is this a legal mandate that I cannot, you know, that would put me and subjugate me to prison, you know? And so I think in that moment, at a very tender age, I had like the wake-up call that, you know, law and policy definitely plays a big part in outcomes for people.
Yeah, and obviously those outcomes and the laws don't aren't equal between people, you know, whether it's racial or economics or just geographic locations, you understand that. So eventually you decided to not just pay attention, but to run for office. What was the thing that made you decide, I am going to take this giant leap? And do you think you were prepared for what would come?
So, you know, I think I certainly believe that I was trained well to perform as an elected official doing policy. But, you know, there is an aspect that I will talk about that there's no way I was prepared for. But, you know, what got me to run is just the outcomes for young people in terms of our educational outcomes for young people in our city, in New Orleans. And, like, you know, I think as a young black male who oftentimes I am viewed as the minority or rather the token and the person who, you know, you are not the norm, right? And that is in itself a problem and what has been a problem for me. And it's like, well, we need more me's and we got to do a better job of making sure we're able to do that, right? Because I certainly don't feel like I am, you know, not the norm in my community. I just feel like I had a better safety net to ensure that I was able to be seen in the world and receive all the supports that I needed to get where I'm at. And that's the truth. And I guess to the point on, you know, what made me step up, it was, you know, not feeling like, you know, I was represented very well at the time, you know, in terms of the issues that I wanted to see come forward. But I'll also admit the thing that I'll tell you in terms of preparation, you know, I have a legal degree. I went to Howard for law school. I've worked for a member of Congress. I actually started doing policy work after law school on the juvenile criminal justice side of things. And so I started I started my chops at the state legislature in Louisiana. And so I had done work, mm-hmm. In the criminal justice and ed policy space, but, you know, that I didn't feel like that was the issue. The thing that you personally, I feel like I was not ready for, and I don't know how anyone ever can be ready for, it is the calls and the emails, mm-hmm. and just the messages about, you know, the loss of life when you're in the role of a school board member or even, I think, city worker. So, like, when someone dies, when a kid dies or they're full, you know, you get a text message telling you what school they're in, what happened, and there's just no way to prepare for a loss of life that has not, I mean, one, loss of life, period, but two, you know, has not necessarily fulfilled their full potential on this earth. So definitely more emotional and a lot to be said there about the process of being able to deal with and handle the emotional toll of the position and just the mental health aspects of making sure that you're ready for being able to deal with that. But, you know, inequality definitely breeds more of those things that you have to look out for and be ready for. And if you have half of a soul, it definitely will wane on you.
Yeah, and so you decided to run for school board. What made you have that decision? What have you wanted to accomplish in doing that?
Yeah, I think for me it was, you know, just trying to make sure. I think I spoke about this a little earlier. You know, the point of being a young man and a young person growing up in a, you know, low income background, and you know, I had the opportunity after my run in with the law at six to finish high school at the age of 16, and then I went off to college, and I finished college at the age of 19, and I finished law school by the time I was 22.
Oh man, so, it made me feel lazy.
You know, you know, I think I was motivated, right? Mm-hmm. And wanted to make sure that I was able to give back to those young people to make sure that they know that there's somebody who's in similar circumstances, who grew up in similar circumstances, who was able to persevere and not only, you know, not only persevered, but came back to help make sure that other young people would be provided the same type of supports needed and the same type of education that I was able to receive, if not better. And so that was my reasoning. It's like, you know, can we give those who are of low income, you know, the best education possible? And let's be clear, there's no jurisdiction across our country who has educated low income minority students well as a whole. And that is the goal. I mean, that is what we should be striving for, and that is what I'm striving for. And it keeps me up at night. It keeps me working and motivated to ensure that we're able to get there. And, yeah, I think those are the things that definitely, you know, made me want to say, let me put my hat in the ring to get this done.
You know, the way you're talking reminds me of the student loan debt debate from the last year. And that I had some friends who heard about, like, Elizabeth Warren and now... And others who talked about canceling student loan debt or canceling it for certain people, et cetera. And they said, well, I paid that. Why shouldn't someone else? And it seems like there's when you succeed and you've succeeded through your education and your opportunities, you can either, you know, just give someone advice or close the door and say, now you do it. I did it. Or you can throw them a ladder. And hopefully and hold the door open so they can come with you. It sounds like you would throw them a ladder. Do you think that your experience has kind of given you them that mentality that it's not just me, I got to bring others with me?
Definitely. I think that you certainly need to make sure that you bring others with you. But I think the other issue is that, like, it just wasn't fair. Right? Like,
right.
The fundamental idea of, like, just because I weathered through it doesn't necessarily mean that it was right. Mm-hmm. And so now, you know, I fight through, and I think many folks, you know, who seek to change something, it's like, you don't keep it there because, you know, it is the, you know, the haze of the process to get through and to be able to show that you're on the other side with the same scars and fire, and we can sit around and talk about, well, oh, was there fights in your school? Oh, did you have to deal with the lack of books? Oh, did you have AP, you know, support? Did you get tutoring? You know, like, and struggle through that. And I just don't want to have the, you know, the struggle Olympics, right? Where you, who struggles the most to get through? Mm-hmm. And in fact, like, I think our job is to make sure that it is easier for the people who come after us. And if if you look at how wealth is built and how communities who are, you know, better situated socioeconomic or otherwise, they make sure that they're supporting the folks who come after them in a way that it definitely makes it easier in terms of legacy and ensuring that happens. And our legacy is these young people who come from our same circumstance. And, you know, I'll tell you, it wasn't easy. I mean, right. I still, in this moment, struggle with that.
You know, it goes back to me when I'm listening to you. I talk about this with other people who've run for office on this podcast, that running for office can be fun as long as you're not doing it alone. And just like life is more fun when you're not doing it alone. And we know that now with everyone being quarantined and being separated, people want to be together. I imagine that when you are able to lift other people up into your circumstances, when you've improved, it makes your own life better because then you're not alone doing it.
That's exactly right. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I was going to talk about, and I should talk about, like, this idea of moving from one socioeconomic status to the other, and because of your cultural upbringing, not feeling a sense of normalcy in that new socioeconomic center. So, like, you know, I started off low income, and now I am, you know, considered middle class. And when you have conversations with other middle class families and folks, you go, okay, there's a difference here because we didn't grow up under the same conditions. It's not a bad thing, but the truth of the matter is, you know, you feel, at least for myself, sometimes more isolated because I'm no longer low income, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't get the same, you know, I'm not able to go and have those conversations and act like I, you know, I'm now in that same situation, but I'm also not middle class, really. You know, I'm from, you know, I'm a new middle classer. And so being able to create your own space and tribe is important. I think many of us are looking for our tribe in the world, and being able to make sure that you're not alone moving from one status to the next is important.
So on school board, what are the things that you want to do or have done that you see as making a positive difference that you're able to do? Because when I talk to people, and, you know, my experience with talking to folks, you can have the mentality of, well, a Democrat's going to run against a Republican, and so the Democrat will do what a Democrat does, Republican will the Republican do, etc. Obviously, that's not true. But what are what are the things that you have strived to do or accomplish or hope to accomplish? So that's a lot. You can narrow it down, but that you have been able to focus on.
Yeah. So, you know, I will say that in New Orleans, our system has certainly improved over the last 4 years since I've been elected, and we've been able to do many things. You know, I think the first thing is, you know, we ushered out the state which is titled the Recovery School District, and they basically, you know, after Katrina, which is, you know, we're 15 years removed, they basically came in and took over the lion's share of schools as they were considered failing or low performing, and not since Katrina has the district controlled all of the schools. And so during my tenure, we ushered out the RSD, and we combined the Recovery School District and the school district, the Orleans Parish School Board, into one whole system. And the crazy thing is, I'm sure many of people probably remember who pay attention to education and education reform and all these things. You may have known about the state state takeover of schools in New Orleans, but I doubt that you heard about the combining of our schools into one district and the work that we've been able to do, which I thought was pretty phenomenal and seamless. You know, I will tell you that, you know, we have been able to balance our budget, working on one of the smallest central staff budgets in our state because we are predominantly charter school system, which therefore we, with the charters, we take as a central staff largely 2%. There is a difference if we keep schools in our LEA, we get a little bit more money, but largely, you know, we act as a pass-through, which is not the case for most central staff. So our central staff is balancing a budget with the least amount of money possible. You know, I'll tell you, we've improved and increased our accountability measures and metrics for our charter schools and their boards. which is really important. And I'll tell you, beyond just the academics portion of holding charters to a higher standard and making sure their boards receive training, which they were not before I got elected, you know, we have also looked at and wanted to make sure we took care of some system things. So, you know, our school district is one where it doesn't matter where you live, you have the opportunity to go to any school in our city. While we have geographical preferences, they are not binding in the way that most people know attended school zones to be. But we heard from our community and our families who wanted to make sure if students lived in a half-mile radius that they had a greater opportunity to attend that school. So, you know, we started to fix some of those things of our system. As you probably know, many people have lied and may continue to lie around the country about where they live in order to get their kids into better schools. And as a result, you have some families and some mothers who have found themselves on the other end of the law because of this. And so our district's a little different. You know, I'll tell you that, we have, since I've been elected, done some other stuff, right? I'll tell you, we've increased the wages of our lowest paid workers to $15 an hour, and we're the only governmental agency in New Orleans to have done so, to make sure that our lowest paid workers, which is largely our cafeteria and janitorial staff, that they're making a livable wage. You know, we've increased our DBE participation to 36%, which is far above what the average has asked us to do. And this is like millions, almost tens of millions of dollars in support for small and disadvantaged businesses. And there's much more that we've done to include the voices of our families and our teachers and our young people and our pastors in the process of our system by creating advisory groups to hear from them. So, I mean, look, I'll tell you, I think we have done a lot of work to get our system moving in the right direction. And the outcome, you know, has definitely shown in terms of an increase of our graduation rates for our seniors, you know, an increase in our growth for our schools and our students, you know, and there's a lot more to go to make sure that we're able to ensure that all of our young people are getting what they need.
That sounds both fabulous and like a lot to have to focus on. You talked earlier about your background, both, you know, through Howard and working with the legislature before you ran. Have you used your experience, not just in terms of running for office, to help you run for office, but have you found your past experience help you to know what questions to ask, help you to know what levers to pull to accomplish some of these things?
Oh, certainly. I mean, I think that the half the job is asking the right questions.
Yeah.
Right? And the other half is holding people accountable to those questions that are either answered or unanswered. And so, you know, certainly asking the right questions and hearing from community when you're not on the ground of an issue, being able to discern what is true and what is not, and asking the right questions that our community want to make sure is answered. I think that's hugely important. And I would say that, you know, the biggest thing that anyone who's running could do is make sure that you understand the right questions and the process for which things are to take place within the current system, and then figure out levers and places that you would want things to change. You know, I think for me, one of the biggest things that I did when I first got elected was, you know, we changed the charter contract in New Orleans, and we included language that would allow for, you know, the board to have, you know, the flexibility if something needed to change in our policy, that the contract itself wouldn't be voided. I thought that was important. Mm-hmm. I thought also making sure that there was training for school boards. For charter boards was important, particularly when we as school board members are expected to have CLEs, and we got to make sure that these folks feel confident and have the necessary knowledge to be able to, again, ask the right questions while they are managing their board and the system. So definitely asking the right questions and knowing the process is important.
Yeah, I have found through my time being on council and just and other things too, that part of the knowledge that you have from doing the things that you've done, not just being running for office and being in office, but just meeting people and making connections, is one, you kind of know what questions to ask to get from point, not just point A to point B, but from point F to point R, right? To, you know, experience lets you know what questions to ask. And also, you develop allies where you can ask confident questions, because I've had a lot of times when I thought, oh man, I wonder how this works. I don't want to ask this to that person because then I sound like an idiot. But I could ask my friend who's a state rep. He'll give me some tips. And then I have this confidence with certain people that I can ask a question where no one's going to say, why didn't you know that already, Tony? Like, building those allies and, again, lifting people up, pulling them up, throwing that ladder back, helps you grow your pool of who you can ask and how you can ask.
That's exactly right, Tony. I think most people don't understand that, like, once you're elected, you are, there's this pressure of you now understand the full system and you know how to move the things that you want to move. And like being able to ask questions that showcase the fact that you don't know oftentimes makes us feel vulnerable and sometimes can make it seem like, well, why did we entrust you to do this? But I think the problem in that is inherent in that, you know, we have people doing the same thing that hasn't necessarily worked for people outcomes. And, you know, I think COVID-19 has definitely exposed how much our systems are not ready for, you know, to be battle tested and ensure that people are taken care of at the end of the day. And so, you know, I think you're right on, spot on, to be able to stay vulnerable. Ask the questions and find the right allies where you can find out something that you, you know, don't know. And it's okay. I think that's right.
Yeah, it's very important to put yourself into a situation where you can ask questions because, you know, I look at every state legislature, it seems like, especially now, has a lot of people saying a lot of stupid things. And we all have stupid thoughts. You know, we all have ignorant thoughts sometimes about whatever. But give those ignorant thoughts to someone else so you don't sound ignorant, right?
That's right. There has to be some litmus test of like, can I say this to a body of people and can I still instill the public trust that has been bestowed upon me in having this position? Now, look, I wanna just jump to a really quick, you know, issue that is also undergirded in this is that most times, especially if you're down ballot and younger, you know, you're oftentimes working a full-time job while also trying to represent, you know, a full community. And so you find yourself raising kids, working a full-time job, and being elected and doing that work, you know, way into the night, whereas you have, you know, other folks who are retired, who may be well off financially and otherwise, and they have the opportunity to do this as a full-time job, even though we know that the work of some of these positions should be fully funded as full-time jobs. And that in itself is a problem that we definitely need to deal with as a nation.
Yeah, I mean, because, you know, you know, especially on these local levels, but until now when I ran, there were a lot of people who were older who were maybe real estate workers, developers, which is fine. They're not bad people, or retired, or, you know, they had the kind of jobs or no job where, like, they didn't have to work. And so, again, I'm not criticizing them for those backgrounds. It's fine. But that's not the only people that we need to be represented on councils or school boards, especially on school boards where you need a certain kind of representation.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. It's not truly representative government. right? And, you know, we got to figure out how to make sure that we're not asking folks who, you know, who work for, you know, the in the hospitality industry to not be a part of the government in which supports them because they can't afford to run and they can't afford to be elected. And that oftentimes is the case in this moment. And I definitely know that very well.
Right. So finally, again, the podcast is called You Should Run. You have a lot of good things to say, like, and I appreciate it. If you're someone who, if someone's listening and they're interested in politics, especially this year with the presidential race going on, and I don't mean to talk about president, I mean they're engaged because of that. Why should they run for office, and especially some of these other offices, whether it's school board or council or mayors or whatever, why should people take the plunge now and consider running for office, whether in 2020 or 2021 or beyond?
Well, that's because, you know, people should definitely in this moment run for office because there is something that needs to be changed. And there is a vision within you that you believe can carry us to the next place and space that we need to be. And if that's inside of you and you know that you are committed to that, you know, it's selfish of us to hold our gifts from others, particularly when you know that that gift can change life outcomes for others. And so in this moment, I would tell you, be selfless and definitely show us your talent and get us to that next plateau of being able to provide better outcomes for our people.
Right. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Ethan. I really enjoyed hearing from you, and I wish you the best of luck in Louisiana. I did get, from my Secret Santa, got me a Steve Gleason jersey for Christmas this year. So I have, even though I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, I have at least one New Orleans Saint jersey.
Well, if you're going to have one, Steve is definitely the one to have. He is a saint. Among saints, and if you know his story of resilience and fight, you know, I think all of us, should try to have a little Steve in us. And so you got the right one. And look, whenever you're in the great state of Louisiana and in the great city of New Orleans, you definitely have a friend in me, my friend, and come hang out.
I can't wait to hang out with anybody right now, but especially I hope to come to I would love to come to New Orleans. I've never been. It's something I want to do. And if I, not if, when I finally can get out there, you'll be one of my first calls.
Sounds good.
All right. Have a good one and best of luck.
All right. Thank you all so much.